The Holy Gospel according to Mark.
Glory to you, Lord.
Jesus set out and went away to the region of Tyre. He entered a house and did not want anyone to know where he was, that he was there. Yet he could not escape notice. But a woman whose little daughter had an unclean spirit immediately heard about him. And she came and bowed down at his feet. Now the woman was a Gentile of Syrophoenician origin. She begged him to cast the demon out of her daughter. He said to her, "Let the children be fed first, for it is not fair to take the children's food and to throw it to the dogs." But she answered him, "Sir, even the dogs under the table eat the children's crumbs." Then he said to her, "For saying that, you may go. The demon has left your daughter." So she went home, found the child lying on the bed, and the demon gone. Then he returned from the region of Tyre and went by way of Sidon toward the Sea of Galilee in the region of the Decapolis. They brought to him a deaf man who had an impediment in his speech, and they begged him to lay his hand on him. He took him aside in private, away from the crowd, and put his fingers into his ears and spat and touched his tongue. Then looking up to heaven, he sighed and said to him, "Ephphatha," that is, "be opened." And immediately his ears were opened, his tongue was released, and he spoke plainly. Then Jesus ordered them to tell no one, but the more he ordered them, the more zealously they proclaimed it. They were astounded beyond measure, saying, "He has done everything well. He even makes the deaf to hear and the mute to speak." This is the gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, Christ. You may be seated. Job. That's a heavy cross. When I was in first grade, I decided to stay in for recess one time. It's this vivid memory that I have as a kid that even at that age, I would get to a capacity where I was peopled out, if you know what I mean. So I decided I was going to stay in. And my first grade teacher, Mrs. Knurr, had compassion on me, and she allowed me to infringe on some of her personal time. And I helped her pass back papers. Jason was the first kid back into the room after recess. And he sat by me. And I remember him coming into the room, looking me square in the eye, pointing at me and calling me a brown noser. I didn't even know what he meant by that. He called me a brown noser. What's that supposed to mean? Was there something on my nose? I didn't know. He was the kind of kid who had shaved lines on the side of his head and a little rat tail running down the bottom of his neck because it was the 80s. I just dated myself again. Jason wasn't really nice to anyone, so I figured he hadn't singled me out that day. I just happened to be his particular target at that moment. Brown noser. But to this day, I can still vividly recall that memory and vividly replay those feelings I had inside of me and the confusion that it caused. I went home that night and talked to my mom about this, and she said that a brown noser is a teacher's pet, just in case you weren't quite sure. In the fifth grade, I was teasing some classmates while Mrs. Zimmer was teaching social studies. And I remember being kind of bored, and so I was doodling. And I made a sign with an arrow, and the arrow had a name on it. I don't even remember what I wrote on that sheet of paper, but I do remember holding up the sign and pointing it to my friend Lenny. Lenny was in my group of friends, and we had had a particularly fun recess that day with lots of inside jokes. He also happened to be the only African-American kid in my class. I don't remember anything about what was written on that sheet of paper. I think I blocked it from my memory. But it just so happened that it did mean something. That I remember when Mrs. Zimmer came over to my desk and stopped right in front of me, got really quiet, took the piece of paper, ripped it up, and in front of everyone told me to go sit out in the hallway and think about what I had done. Poet Courtney Peppernell writes, "You can't skip the chapters. That's not how life works. You have to read every line, meet every character, and you won't enjoy all of it." Maybe that resonates with you. Perhaps you've been called a name before, been whistled at while walking down the street, judged for your parenting or your work ethic, made to feel less than, or had an experience when someone put a label on you or your group of people because of something that was central to the part of your identity. Perhaps you too have been a part of intentionally or unintentionally or ignorantly using speech or actions that have been hateful or demeaning. Perhaps you too could wish to rewrite that chapter. Oh, that it would end. Jesus calls this Gentile woman of Syrophoenician origin a dog. And it seems inexcusable. This woman who pleads to Jesus for her daughter who is in dire straits, who is possessed with a demon, to be healed. To which Jesus replies, "Let the children, that is the children of Israel, the covenant people, be fed first. For it is not right to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs." Now, to his credit, he did say the word first, as in let the children be fed first, as though maybe there was going to be a second offering. But I was telling some people as I was preparing for this sermon today that it was just not jiving with me, this downer text that we get on this beautiful day where we have all of this excitement going on. It just doesn't mesh. How could Jesus be pointing us into this direction of an experience with a person of a different gender, of a different race, of a different background, and he calls her a dog? It's interesting because, I don't know about you, but I was really excited to come to church today. I woke up at 3 a.m. I was so excited. Don't worry, I downed a bunch of coffee. I'm so excited about the new Sunday school year. I feel like God has provided so much in this season of our life together. I'm so excited for the new confirmation year. The return of the regular rhythm has this sense of excitement about it yet. Maybe if you're an educator or an administrator, that's still coming, but it will come. We have God's Work Our Hands Sunday. Choir is resuming, which is so exciting. The cantata that Al has picked out is beautiful. If you want to be a part of that. In addition to all of the things happening in our community this weekend, like Wausau Festival of the Arts, or the beautiful series of days that God has given to us this week to explore Rib Mountain, or as I hear, a certain sport returning to a regular season or something like that. I'm so not a football fan, but I grew up in Wisconsin, don't worry. But why is Jesus, the Savior of the world, so dismissive in the gospel today? Can't we get like a love your neighbor as yourself kind of thing, riffing off of the James passage? Or that beautiful Isaiah text that starts with, "Do not be afraid, do not be fearful." Couldn't we just hang our hats there for a little while? Why do we have to go to this particular passage where Jesus is frankly horrible, or so it would seem? But at the poet's suggestion, we can't skip through this chapter. As we love the Lord with all of our heart, all of our soul, all of our strength, and all of our mind, it is our responsibility to be faithful to this passage because we know Christ through the scriptures. And so wrestle with it we must. We must. And we can't put our own meaning on it. We can't recast what we wish would be said. But to examine every line and to meet every character, meeting them where they are at, to not seek dismissal, but understanding of the complexity of life and the complex nature of our holy book, and in particular this passage. Even if we were to gloss over that whole episode with the Syrophoenician woman, that second story that happens in the text is not much easier to wrestle with because Jesus acts kind of weird. I don't know if you noticed there was something that was like the equivalent of a divine wet willy involving spit. Right? Thank you for shaking your head, Chris. It's odd that this particular healing happens in that really human way. And Jesus sighs, and in my head I just hear him feeling so inconvenienced as this man who has been deaf and mute his whole life is there thinking about the possibility of his ears being opened, his tongue being released, and here is Jesus spitting. It's interesting, to say the least. But as I was reading this passage for the staff meeting in somewhat desperation this last week, it was Al who pointed out to me, but Pastor Jen, the man is healed. He can hear and he can speak. And still, the woman's daughter is found at her home with the demon completely gone. Their lives transformed by this opportunity they had, this encounter with Christ. This last week, we had a text just the chapter before where Jesus had called the Pharisees and the scribes another name. He called them hypocrites. He called them that for self-righteously relying on the letter of God's law rather than the real heart of the matter behind God's law, which was more about love, more about compassion. So from the expansion of that purity law last week, now the Gospel of Mark moves us forward at a really rapid pace. No longer in Judean territory. We are in Tyre. We are in Sidon. The Bible that you probably have has maps. Check out where those places are and look at what happens as the Gospel now moves forward out from its central beginning. And Jesus' own presence and Jesus' own capacity is shifting beyond the people of the covenant. So you know how when your loved ones are hungry and they get a little snippy with you and you bring them some protein and say, here, honey, just eat something. Sometimes I wonder if Jesus was just tired or hungry. Sometimes I wonder if maybe because he didn't get the privacy he needed or wanted, that maybe he had just lost himself in an ignorant human moment. And yet we also think of Jesus as the perfect Savior, the one without sin. So it makes us wonder if he was trying to make another point about uncleanliness or hypocrisy and the law, or whether he was using some ancient Jewish adage that wasn't as threatening, maybe as perhaps as we hear it today. Whether it was all of the above or none of the above, sometimes in our digging for deeper meaning, especially when the text is challenging, there is grace to be found in even just one word. And I think that's the case with this passage. And the word is highlighted because it's mentioned in its original language next to its translation. Ephphatha, which is hard to say. But imagine if your tongue was locked. Ephphatha, which means be opened. It's through the lens of openness that we have been given examples of ways to be open, both by the Syrophoenician woman, who doesn't let it go when Jesus quickly dismisses her, by the deaf and mute man who is brought to Jesus by his friends, and by this transformation we see through Jesus' own change and experience himself. Did you notice how the woman's plea, even the dogs eat under the table, the children's crumbs, turns Jesus' mind around? Even if he was testing her to see if she had some kind of faith, even if he was reluctant to heal a Gentile because he didn't want those people he had just called hypocrites to stumble at his teaching, Jesus opens up the gospel to people beyond the covenant now. It's as if he himself is blooming and blossoming in new ways to the gospel that he came to bring. When I was interviewing at St. Andrew in April of 2012, I had the luxury of taking a tour of the church with both Pastor John and Pastor Craig. It was awesome. And I remember talking with them about the church's mission, which is on the bookmarks in your hymnals. And if you haven't ever read that statement, or if you're not in the practice of reading it, I would invite you, especially in the season of transition in the life of our church, to take a look. It begins this way: St. Andrew Lutheran Church shall be open. To who? To all. And so Pastor Craig, standing there with me in the corner by the fellowship hall, looking at all the pictures of the church's history with Pastor John, said, "Open to all. Great in concept. Sounds beautiful in a mission statement. Difficult in practice." If we are open to all that God puts before us, we also are open to a certain amount of uncertainty because we let go of a little power. If we're open to all that God puts before us, we also live in a certain amount of vulnerability, because that means that we can't plan every step into the future. If we're open to all, that might also mean we're open to some discomfort as we face people and situations that are more complicated than one mere explanation would provide relief. Open to experiences that may teach us something profound but might be difficult to navigate. To extend the metaphor, you have to read every line, meet every character. Heck, some chapters might make you cry for weeks, some certain pages you'll never want to end. But you have to keep going. She continues, "Stories keep the world revolving. Live yours. Don't miss out. Be open." Be open. Ephaphatha. How difficult it can be to be open beyond our own comfort and our own in-group. How difficult it can be to say hello to a complete stranger, to look someone in the eyes when you're shopping at Walmart. How difficult it can be to open yourself up to a new way of learning or growing to strengthen your own faith. How difficult and beautiful it can be. How strengthening it can be to confront matters of injustice together. Things that may not even directly impact us. Big things like helping out reorganize a kitchen at the warming center. Standing up for the integrity and decency and just treatment of every human group, because God just told us again to care for the widow and the orphan. The woman's response to Jesus was bold and courageous, and I love it. Her response to Jesus indicates what we also know to be true, that with God there is openness, enough for all. For if God is open to me, and God is open to you, then clearly God must be open to the whole wide world. The woman had no question in her mind about whether or not God could care for both her needs and her daughter's needs, and the needs of Jesus' Jewish followers. So it was her faith that expanded the gospel, that demonstrated that she believed God was far too abundant to be forced to choose one group of people at the expense of another. It's her legacy that we were able to share today. So maybe the text isn't so bad after all, because it reminds us that we too can rely on God's abundance and God's love for people across all human divides, even the ones that are within. Like Jesus, it might force us to think differently than we have before, but that's a good thing. Jesus demonstrates in the second half of the healing here of the deaf and mute man that he trusts the people who come to him for help with what they think they know they need. And Jesus honors this man by listening to his deepest need. And if that's the case, then think about how Jesus honors your own need, our own needs for healing and reconciliation in our communities. Maybe the need is friendship or companionship. We've got a lot of that here. Maybe the need is difficult honesty or tough love. That's here too. Perhaps it's something tangible that can be met with a helping hand or a willing heart if we are willing to look outward and to be open. So today, let God open you up to something new. It's an invitation to realize that your openness comes because of arms opened on the cross in Jesus Christ. That God was open to us in such a sacrificial way when we were so sinful and broken as a group of people. That God's open arms loved us so much that he would show us a different way, a better way, a cruciform way of being in the world, following in the example of the cross. And that our sacrificial love and service, our openness to others, might also be a way to bring a measure of healing and peace to this world. Brown noser, dog, Syrophoenician, Christian, deaf and mute man, hey you, hypocrites, whatever other name may mark your identity in the end of all the names that will ever be called, I would suggest this one for you today as primary. Child of God.